If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
Entering Kenmore. Doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode 7 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, it's been a couple weeks. Spring training is now underway. I think we're like a week and change in now. And even before spring training, there were a bunch of storylines, mainly with Rafael Devers. And we were just talking before we clicked the record button. And I was saying, I'm kind of glad we waited until this blowed over a bit to put out another episode, because Zach and I were talking, as we often do, about Red Sox stuff. And while this Devers drama was going on, part of me just always felt like it was overblown by the media. So, you know, if to give a quick recap, I think it was now like 2 weeks ago, Devers had his spring training press conference, and people were asking him, with Bregman there, are you okay with moving to DH or first base or wherever else off third? And he yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. A resounding no. And that was it. Didn't need a translator, didn't need anything. So that kind of sealed the deal. And what happened next was the entire Boston sports media went into a spiral of, oh my God, like, the ship is sinking, like everything's going poorly. And from the start, I was like, I don't think anything's actually going to come of this. Like, I don't know if you felt the same way.
Yeah, it kind of happened at the perfect time for the like sports media landscape to jump all over it. Obviously, you had the NHL and the Four Nations break amid the Bruins. Really, like, their season is just completely going off the rails here as the ship is sinking. Then obviously the NBA All-Star break happened at the same time. And there's only so much you can talk about what the Patriots are going to do in free agency. So from a Boston sports media landscape, it literally happened at the perfect time because it filled however many days, a week worth of airtime before people really understood how much of a hit that the Four Nations was going to be. So it gave people all that content to talk about when there really wasn't anything else there to talk about. And it's so funny that he just, to have that, like I was saying the other day when at work, that I need him to say yes to something. So then we can have the two drops of him saying no and yes, to go back and forth. But obviously we're going to dive deeper into it, but Casas then continued to do what Tristan Casas does and just stir the pot. Like, he's number one shit stirrer on the Red Sox team. And I, for one, couldn't love him anymore for it. And I know everybody shit on him. And I heard so many fucking brain dead callers be like, you need to get Casas and Devers out of here and bring Vladdy in. It's like, okay, well, you people just fundamentally don't understand baseball, contracts, service time, how the sport operates on a business level. Because if they traded, if they traded even just one of those guys for one season of Vlad Jr. with no guarantee that he was going to re-sign, like, that's a fireable offense in my book. But yeah, I'm right there with you. I thought it was pretty overblown. Like, obviously Devers is going to be like, no, dude, I don't want to fucking move positions. I've been playing this position my entire career. Like, why would I? And if it was the other way around, he was like, yep, I cannot wait to get off the fucking field. Callers would call in. I mean, I heard it all last year doing Red Sox review. once Devers was hurt, it was this lazy piece of shit doesn't want to play baseball. There's no winning for Rafael Devers. And if he like said exactly that, like, yep, I can't wait to DH. I'm very excited to just focus on hitting. People would have just turned it on him all the same. So I think it was just a media, not necessarily media fabrication, obviously, because Devers said what he said, but it was a product of there not being very much to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that very easily allowed them to stir the pot. And Tristan Casas, like you said, didn't help. Grade A instigator Tristan Casas. I think it was the day after. They were interviewing him. And obviously reporters know that he has no filter. So when there's a little bit of a controversy going on, yeah, who are we going to ask but the guy who never shuts up? So someone asked him, what do you think about the whole situation? Do you want Devers at DH or where do you think he should go? And he very, very eloquently stated that Rafael Devers is his third baseman. He wants him to play third. That's
best
all he's
third
ever
baseman
known
in the league.
Yeah. Yeah. Among other things, in addition to saying that he doesn't want any of the young guys to make the roster, which is a whole nother conversation, but like you said, I love Tristan Casas. I think if this were any other market, then people would love him, to be honest. I think in Boston, it's tough because like they just analyze every little thing about what you say. And I think it's kind of easy for me to tell that he's just BSing. Like I don't know. That's kind of, I don't act like that. I mean, obviously I'm not in front of a microphone nearly as much as he is and answering questions from the media. I've never done that, but I feel like I would kind of fuck with people too. Like, it's just funny.
And we know that he likes to do that. Like when the Celtics were getting ready to play the Mavs last year, he got asked like, who do you got? He's like, I got the Mavs in a clean sweep. It's not even going to be close. They might win by 70 every game. Give me the Mavs. It's like, yeah, obviously he's just trying to rile people up. Like, who cares?
Exactly. Like, this is not the first rodeo with Tristan Casas. It will certainly not be the last. But I don't understand why every time this happens, then it just reignites the fire of people being like, get this guy out of here yesterday.
These people, because they're going to shut the fuck up so quickly when he hits 40 bombs this year.
Exactly.
Like, it is going
exactly
to be unbelievable how quickly these people shut up.
Like, we are forgetting so much how much upside Tristan Casas has. To ship him out, or to want to ship him out for 1 year of Vladdy Jr.
at his lowest value
is asinine. He didn't play basically the entire year, but the year before, he was, you were loving him. Everybody was loving him. They're like, this guy's the future. And the whole plan from day one was Tristan Casas is going to come up a couple years before the Roman Anthony, the Marcelo Myers, and now the Christian Campbells. And this was the plan all along. I don't see why now, when the plan is right about to come to fruition, you're like, yeah, just get this guy out of here. And another part of this is, I maybe we've talked about this too, but I see Tristan Casas as very similar to a Joey Votto, a Zach Greinke. You know, that unique personality that a lot of baseball fans gravitate towards. And they loved those guys. Joey Votto and Greinke gave very weird interviews from time to time, or just did weird shit. And the media loved them. The media loved highlighting those, especially the MLB accounts. And that's the same thing that they're doing with Casas. It's just the Boston market doesn't like it for some reason.
Yeah, and you said, I mean, he was at the Home Run Derby last year. Obviously, he was hurt, or else I think maybe there's a chance that he would have been playing in the All-Star game with the way that he was swinging the bat to start the season. But he was at the Home Run Derby doing, like, the TikTok broadcast for the league. So, like, Major League Baseball, who couldn't fucking market the most entertaining person in the history of the sport, is gravitating towards him and seeing him as someone like, all right, this is a guy that He's going to be a personality. We can use him on the TikTok broadcast. We can use him to grow the game. And like you said, like, these fucking people just couldn't ship him out of town fast enough. And I like the Joey Votto comp, because this was something that we were talking about yesterday. We're not that far removed from, as a prospect, Casas being compared to Joey Votto, to Freddie Freeman, to being a guy with really elite power, really elite bat to ball skills, and a really good eye. And like, Joey Votto won an MVP. We know what Freddie Freeman is. And now, just because, like, oh, he paints his nails, we got to get this guy out of here. Like, who paints their nails? That's a, you think that they're comfortable in the locker room with him having his nails painted? Like, do you idiots look at the catchers, like, ever? Like, ever? Did you, obviously the pitch comm has eliminated that, but before the pitch comm, every single catcher in the league had their nails painted. Literally every single one. To help the pitcher see their signals. So like, oh, he paints his nails, he's got to be weird. Like, and obviously we know what it is. Like, we don't have to dance around it. Like, these people are just homophobic is what it comes down to. And like, which is bullshit to begin with. And I guess I can use this to segue into another one of my points about Devers. People get so mad about him speaking through a translator and speaking Spanish during his interviews. And he obviously comprehends the English language because the translator doesn't have to repeat the question to him. He listens to the question and spits out his answer in Spanish. And like, again, like, you have these people calling in and or these people on Twitter being like, why doesn't this guy speak English? You're playing in America. You need to speak English. It's because you fucking dickheads take everything he says out of context. So if he tries to answer a question in English and gets lost in translation and he trips over his words because it's not his first language, then you dickheads are going to jump all over him for that too and be like, why did he say it like this instead of saying it like that? Like, probably because it's not his first language. Like, this isn't his first rodeo with the Boston media market. I mean, he said no and you ran with it for a week and a half. So like, what do you think is going to happen if he messes something up in translation and something that's not his first language? Like, they're going to take it and run with it and try and run him out of town all over again.
Yeah. And like you said, I think you put it best when you said that there's really no winning in this situation for Devers. It was always going to be, he would have to move. He would be the odd man out in this situation. Whether it be if the Red Sox got Arenado, I think it would have even been more clear. But now that they have Bregman, he has a defensive versatility. Now this debate has been sparked. But I don't understand why you'd sign Alex Bregman to be your second baseman. I really don't. And now that he's here, and Devers has shown no improvements defensively, basically since he's been here, and he has the shoulder concerns. I don't think he's played a game yet in spring training.
No, he hasn't yet.
Because of his shoulders. So we're going to put that guy back at third base when we have the past Gold Glove winner just sitting in the wings ready to go. That doesn't make sense to me. And I just, the hearing all these callers about this, like, every week and now saying they want to ship out, they want to package Vladdy and, or Casas and Devers for Vladdy. That is just the worst thing I've ever heard, because I don't even think they've looked at the financials or the time left on the contracts. But all of this to say, I'm glad we waited to unpack this, because I knew that a week later we would have some more information. And since then, it's come out from a bunch of different people. Lucas Giolito mentioned that the vibes have never been higher in the clubhouse. Alex Bregman has said that none of the people in the locker room give a shit about what the media has been saying about this. I don't know where else you can put it other than this has been way overblown and it's not a big deal. I always thought from the jump that Devers was going to play wherever they tell him to. He's not going to give up the position. He's not just going to bend over and be like, oh, here you go. Like, that's natural. The competition is natural, especially with athletes. Like, I understand that completely, but the writing's kind of on the wall at this point. And yeah, I'm not worried about it. I think it'll all figure itself out. I don't want this to mess with the vibes either. So,
and it doesn't seem like it is within the locker room. It seems like this is like totally a fan and media driven narrative. And I do want to touch on, before we move on, the Cora comments afterwards, obviously, that Devers was promised third base for multiple years after he signed the contract. And in Cora, just if there was Cora couldn't have thrown Heim under the bus any quicker. He was just like, yep, that was Heim, and he's in St. Louis now. But I don't think it matters that he was promised. Like, I think Cora is right. Like, that was a Heim decision, and that was, and I saw plenty of people being like, oh, you don't think ownership signed off on them promising Devers third base for the foreseeable future? It's like, no, I don't think that ownership signed off on him playing third base for the foreseeable future. Why would ownership sign off on that? Why, like, you go to John Henry and say, hey, John, we need to lock up Rafael Devers. You understand the repercussions. If we don't, like, we already lost Mookie, we lost Bogarts. This is the guy that we've committed to. We've come out in the media and said, these are the guys that we're going to try and lock up long-term that are going to hit the open market at the age 26 season, not on the wrong side of 30. We're comfortable giving these types of guys mega deals. We're going to offer him $300 and whatever million dollars. John says, yep, A-okay. Where are we going to play him? Are you going to promise him to play third base? No, John doesn't give a fuck about where, oh, we have to make sure we promise him to play third base. Like, no, Heim told him you're going to be the third baseman for the foreseeable future. Heim's no longer here. There's been a clear shift in philosophy in the Breslow era. So, like, for them to be, like, magically, like, oh, well, he was promised third base. He has to be at third base. Like, Cora's exactly right. That was the last guy. He's no longer here, and we have a gold glove winner at third base. Like, at the end of the day, I know I've said this a million times, and it's stealing a line from Cam Neely, who hopefully is going to be unemployed in a couple months, but Devers has 313 million reasons or whatever the number is of that contract that he's going to move to DH. Like, he's getting that money no matter what, and none of it is for playing third base. And I'm looking at the numbers right now. Up until the All-Star break last year, Devers was on pace to have a career year. 291 batting average, 965 OPS, 23 bombs, 18 doubles, 61 RBIs. Then after the All-Star break, he hit almost 200, and that's when he got hurt. So, like, we're talking about a shift from a guy who would have been probably top five in MVP finish if he continued on that pace the entire season and never got hurt. But instead, he hurt his shoulder diving for a ball. I think it was in the Anaheim series, like right after Story got hurt. He was rolling around grabbing that shoulder, and it lingered the entire season. And then it cost him the entire second half. He hit 5 home runs in the second half of the season after hitting, what did I say, 23 in the first half? So, like, it shouldn't even be a question whether or not he should DH or not. And he should want to be a DH. Like, out of all people that should want to be a DH, Rafael Devers should want to be a DH. Like, he grew up watching David Ortiz. If there's any market that loves a just lefty DH that fucking mashes, it's this one. And it's really the only team that has a, like, regular DH nowadays. We know that other teams like to use that position for versatility, except for the Red Sox. So, like, we didn't even get into the whole do you want to be traded thing, and he was like, I haven't thought that far ahead yet. Like, obviously he doesn't want to be traded, because if any other team traded for him, they'd be like, all right, buddy, you're a first baseman or you're a DH. Like, no other team in the league views him as a third baseman. They simply can't. He's been the worst defensive third baseman for the last, like, 5 years.
Yeah. And I think another part of this that people aren't really talking about is when he fucks up in the field, that impacts his offensive ability. Exactly. It gets so much in his head. And you can tell he is one of the most easy to spot players in terms of body language, I think, in the entire league. Like, if you watch his at-bats, he's talking to himself the entire time. Sometimes he's, like, hitting himself.
He hits himself in the head.
Yeah. So it's pretty obvious when he's down. A lot of that has to do with his bad defense. If you just eliminate that whole aspect of the game and just let him focus on hitting, you're going to have a better Rafael Devers easily. And you're going to have better infield defense. So I don't understand what the debate is. I also don't understand the people who are trying to get rid of him, because that's the ideal DH, a guy who hits nukes. And that's all he needs to do. That is absolutely the player I want on my team. And another part of this is I'm so sick and tired of people being like, oh, he's not a leader on this team, so why does he get to say this? Who gives a shit?
He's your best player. Like,
he's your best player, and he has made it clear from the jump. You did not sign him to this extension being like, you're going to be the leader of this team. That's why they brought in Trevor Story. That's why they brought in Alex Bregman. Because Devers has made it clear he has never wanted to do that, and I'm totally fine with that. But I'm sick and tired of hearing all the people just shitting on him.
It and I think a lot of it is like it's because of the color of his skin, and it's because he doesn't speak English as a first language. And like, I mean, I hear, and not to like pigeonhole radio callers as like the entire fan base, but like those are by far the most vocal portion of the fan base.
Oh yeah,
the people that hate him, like they're it's like the loudest 1% possible of people, but it's, yeah, it's a lot has to do with those two things, that he doesn't speak English and the color of his skin. And it's just, it's ridiculous because all these same people love David Ortiz. They love Mookie Betts. They love Xander Bogaerts. And it, like you said, Rafael Devers has never been a leader. He's never been the guy that's going to step up in front of the media and have all the microphones in his face when things are skidding. I mean, could he handle some of these situations better? I forget where they were last year, where the media was waiting like a half hour for him to come out and talk to them in the middle of the season falling apart, and he just completely ghosted them. Like, I think it's fair to say that he could have handled something like that better, but like to act like he is supposed to be this guy, the Xander Bogaerts, the David Ortiz, the Dustin Pedroia, that's going to be the fit, like he's the best player, but he's not the face of the franchise. As much as people want to make him out to be that because he signed the largest contract in franchise history, like that contract wasn't signed because he's the leader. It's because he's the best player and he fucking mashes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking while you were saying that is I'm no Houston Astros fan, admittedly, not at all, but Yordan Alvarez is the best player on that team now. And he is not the leader. Jose Altuve is, and he always has been.
Right.
Just another comparison there that Bregman you can be fine. Exactly. Exactly. You are totally fine if your best player is not the leader. That doesn't matter at all. And it shouldn't be bothering people.
No. But.
Well, we have some. Did you want to touch on Devers at all anymore? Pause.
I don't think I had too much else other than like it just doesn't seem like I think, like I said, I think it just happened at the perfect time where the Four Nations break, the NBA All-Star break. It's at the time it was a little bit of a lull in the NFL offseason where it was in between the Super Bowl, and now obviously the combine and the draft process really starting to ramp up now. So it just happened at the perfect time where nobody else had anything else to talk about, and Devers said, "You're looking for something to talk about? I'll give you something to talk about." And then Casas kind of dumped gasoline on the fire on top of everything else. And like, I guess I do want to touch on one last thing. I don't even necessarily disagree with what Casas said with keeping the kids down. And like, I do think there's a scenario where Bregman is the starting second baseman, Devers is at third, and Yoshida's the DH, because there's only one of the prospects that is actually playing well in spring training right now. Anthony's been okay. Campbell, we're going to get into it. Campbell's been really bad so far.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a hit. He has 7 strikeouts and 9 at-bats. And Von Grissom also doesn't have a hit. David Hamilton has looked okay. But, like, I do think there's a scenario where that happens, where it's Yoshida DH, Devers third base, Bregman second base, and then as those guys go down and start to figure things out, then you can figure out where you go from there. But I do think there's something to be said for seeing what you have with the big league roster first, especially if these guys aren't really forcing their way onto the major league roster, which is all along what it felt like they were going to have to do to crack the opening day lineup.
Yeah, that was the conversation all offseason was, can either of these guys, Meyer is a different case just because he's been injured, and obviously we'll get to him later because he's been absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. But the conversation around Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell was, can they force their way onto this roster? Like you said, the early returns are not great. Obviously, there's still a month or so to go until the season starts, but it's a good problem to have. If you can have a very solid major league roster without having to supplement it with any of your young prospects, then I don't see any issue with that. If anything, then it keeps these guys fresher for a playoff push. Like we've seen before, like I don't remember specifically when other guys got called up, but we've seen midseason call-ups make a huge impact. And if anything,
Xander Bogaerts in 2013.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, that puts less pressure on them as is. So I have no problem with that either. Like, if you want them to start the year and, hey, you're batting in the bottom third of the lineup, but, like, let's go see what you got, that's fine. But if you're like, hey, we're in the heat of this playoff race, like, we're sitting pretty in a wild card spot, maybe even at the division lead at that point, and then you put them up, then it's just all gas, no brakes.
Right. It's like you said, it's a great problem to have. Like if we just take a step back and look at what everybody is bitching about right now. Oh no, we have too many good players to field a full lineup. We're going to have too many good players in AAA. Like, shut the fuck up. This is the deepest team the Red Sox have had in years. Like, do you understand what you people are bitching about? We have three top 15 prospects and not relying on them to make the opening day roster and be the savior. And obviously now that we know that Campbell, again, it's been like he has 9 at bats. So like, I'm not pressing the panic button on Christian Campbell, but if there was no Alex Bregman and Christian Campbell was 0-for-9 with 7 strikeouts to start the spring, do you know what these people would be complaining about? They'd be bitching and moaning that they went out and spent zero money and are relying on Christian Campbell to be the savior at second base. But like, I just don't understand. Like, these people will find a reason to bitch about literally anything. Like, if they're like, it's the perfect problem to have. Like, okay, so all three of these guys get to start in AAA. We have probably a top 5 offense in baseball, at minimum a top 10 starting rotation in baseball. I think the bullpen's a little shakier, but like, I already have a ticket on them to win the AL East. Like, I think they're the best team in the AL East, and I don't think that's a hot take. I know everybody's blowing the Yankees because they went to the World Series last year, but I don't think the Yankees were that fucking good last year either. Like, that's what people aren't understanding. Like, the Yankees are not that good. They don't scare me, and I see so many people continuing to pick them to finish at the top of the division, only being like, oh, well, they lost Juan Soto, but they added Paul Goldschmidt and Cody Bellinger and Max Fried, and they supplemented the rotation with that already had Rodon and Cole and Luis Gil, and they added Devin Williams. Like, the only good player they added there, as far as I'm concerned, is Devin Williams. Like, Paul Goldschmidt's fucking rinsed. We'll see what Cody Bellinger does. Like, I'm sure he'll get a boost from hitting in the short porch, but like, the Yankees don't scare me at all. The Orioles regressed. They lost Santander and they lost Corbin Burns, and they replaced them with Tyler O'Neill, who hasn't shown the ability to stay healthy over the course of a full season. And they replaced Corbin Burns with fucking 70-year-old Charlie Morton. So like, that team doesn't scare me at all either. And then like, we didn't even get into the Blue Jays or the Rays because I don't really see them as threats at the top, but like, we already have a team that I know they're not technically favored to win the AL East, but I think they're the best team in the division. And sure, that's a little bit of homerism coming in there, but I don't think that's a particularly hot take. And like I said, you have three top 15 prospects in the entire sport ready to come up at a moment's notice, because we know Trevor Story's injury history. We'll get into the Willier Abreu stuff, but that could leave a spot open in the outfield. And then obviously Campbell, if he starts tearing the cover off the ball, we already know that they think he's worth the drama of moving Devers off of third base. They think he's going to be that good. So it's, I don't know. It's literally just bitching about being too good, which it's fun to have this conversation based on the way the last 2 years went, or more than that, the last really 6 years went, aside from the 2021 miracle run. But like, I just, there's no pleasing these people.
No. And I don't think there ever will be. They could be riding the duck boats through Boston Common and people would still be complaining about something. But like you said, it does feel different. This team feels different heading into spring training. You can just feel the excitement all over Red Sox space, whether that be online, whether that be on the radio, whether that be through podcasts. Everyone is excited and high on this team, and even nationally. Like, I think this has been the most covered the Red Sox have been since 2018. And I mean, whether or not that's good press or bad press with the Devers drama, it's just cool to see the Red Sox back to relevancy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's like you said, they're back relevant. They finally spent the money, and it was obviously everyone bitched for the last however many years, but and called ownership liars for saying that they don't care anymore, this, that, or the other thing. But we're seeing the plan come to fruition. We're seeing Casas up. We're seeing Campbell, Anthony, Meyer on the doorstep, and we're seeing that supplemented with additional talent. We're seeing them go out and give Alex Bregman $40 million a year, and I don't want to hear that it's only a 1 year deal. Like, I know people have been bitching about that. Like, if he opts out of 2 years, $80 million, then so be it. Because like we said, it's a good problem to have because you have these guys ready to step in. So say Bregman opts out and in search of a longer term deal and goes out and gets it from the Cubs or whoever gets Bregman on a longer term deal. Myers working out at third base. So I know Story has a player option at the end of the year too. I think he'd be pretty insane to decline that unless he just had an absolutely career revival year that saw him like back to prime Trevor Story, which like, again, if that happens, then so be it. But you have Meyer that you can plug in at third if you've already made the move for Devers at DH, Campbell at second, Anthony in left. And that's before we even get into the Vaughn Grissoms of the world. So, like, theoretically, even if you lose both Bregman and Story, which I think is incredibly, incredibly unlikely, you just plug in Grissom at second or third, Story or and Meyer at short. Like, you can figure it out. You have more depth that you've had in years. And this is an argument that I had a couple weeks ago where I think this is a baseball town at its core. Like, obviously, the Patriots had their 20-year run, but now look at what happens there. And now the Red Sox are relevant again, and people can't stop talking about them. And it's nice to finally have a buzz around the team, because obviously, like, me and you are fucking sickos and we're gonna follow this team no matter what. Like, I watched all 60 games of the 2020 season and they were the worst team in the history of the sport.
And yeah, that was painful.
Like, they had, like, they literally had MLB The Show generic players out there on the mound, and I was still locked in watching it. But to have everyone else finally buying in on it is nice to see. Like, the only downside is the tickets aren't going to be as cheap as they have been in years past.
Yeah, that is quite a big downside. But, I mean, I'll pay more to see this product over the product we've seen the last 5 years. I think this is a good transition into the prospects in spring training, because like Zach said, Christian Campbell's off to a very slow start. He is, as of right now, is this updated from today?
Yeah, that's what today.
Okay. So yeah, he is 0-for-9, 2 walks and 7 strikeouts is not going to do it.
Golden sombrero today, 0-for-4, 4 Ks.
Oh boy. Yeah. So, I mean, there are going to be growing pains with these prospects, and on both sides, I think we have to remember this is spring training and we don't want to overreact to success and we don't want to overreact to, you know, a slow start like Campbell's. So I think he's going to be fine, and obviously has a month to fix this, and it is what it is. Like, I think for him to have made the roster out of spring, he was going to have to start off hot and just keep it going throughout the entire spring. At this point, it's like, I don't know if he's already sealed the deal that he's starting in AAA, but it's trending that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been, I think, 4 games that he's played in, so I don't know if
he's
necessarily sealed the deal here. I was listening to Brad Foe and Cooper Boardman on the radio side calling the game, and Cooper said he obviously saw a good bit of him in AAA last year. He thought maybe the timing was off a little bit because there were some pitches that he saw him fouling off and fighting off that last year he would have driven out of the park. Brad Foe thought maybe he'd be pressing a little bit because of the pressure he put on himself, I would say, now that Bregman's not here
to
make this opening day roster. Because if you talk to or listen to anybody that's down there, they all have the same sentiment of these guys are not here to get reps. They're here to make the big league roster. Every single one of them, Meyer included. And I think maybe he's just putting a little bit too much pressure on himself and getting a little bit out of rhythm. And they said that he was getting just absolutely pounded up and in with fastballs. So obviously we know he has that kind of funky swing path and the funky swing. And people have used that. Was it Kylie McDaniel or whoever maybe had him in as the 26th ranked prospect because of the funky swing. Like, I think those concerns are overblown. Like, if you make hard contact and you can get to the ball, like, who cares what your swing looks like? But I think maybe it's just a little bit putting too much pressure on himself, pushing a little bit too hard, and maybe speeding himself up. But like you said, I'm not overly concerned. Obviously, it's a bad start, and this is the guy that everyone assumed was the one that out of the three that was going to make the opening day roster. So to see him struggling so much is a little bit jarring, but like, it's 9 at-bats at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, exactly.
9 at-bats. Like, and I love a small sample size when it fits my narrative, but 9 at-bats, I'm not going to freak out over it.
Yeah, I'm sure Tristan Casas likes the 0-for-9 start from Campbell after his comments. But someone who has been tearing the absolute cover off the ball is Marcelo Meyer, who Alex Cora yesterday after he went 3-for-3 and was, I think, it must have been a triple off the cycle.
No, he hit the triple. It was a double.
Oh, so it was a double? Yeah, double off the cycle. Yeah. So Cora, after the game, was talking with Rob Bradford and some other reporters and said that Marcelo Meyer is now a guy that people have sort of forgotten about because he was drafted in 2020, right?
Yeah, 21.
21. Okay, so
2020 after, was Nick after, York.
Yeah, after the dumpster fire of the 2020 season, they drafted him with the fourth overall pick. And at the time, people were saying, even at pick 4, that was a steal for Meyer. And throughout his time in the minor leagues now, he's dealt with some injuries and hasn't had as much time to develop as Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell. But people forget how good he is and how highly regarded he has been since he got drafted. And now that's sort of coming to fruition. I mean, if we're going to say that only 9 at-bats for Campbell, you know, is too close to, or is too early to call, then I guess the same can be said for Marcelo Meyer. But
No, this one fits our narrative, so.
Oh, fair, fair. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all in on it, man. I really am. It's interesting to see, like Zach said, we're both sickos. So we've known about Marcelo Meyer for a while. But the casual fans starting to notice him and pronounce his name wrong, which is a whole nother thing.
Meyer. But... Meyer, everybody. Not Mayer.
Yeah.
It's Meyer. He's been in the system for going on 4 years now. It shouldn't be. It's not a difficult last name. You're not fucking trying to pronounce Justinson. Like, which I, when I watched that first game and heard his name as Justinson, yeah, my brain absolutely exploded. I had no idea how to say it. I did not think it was Justinson.
I like it though.
I do.
I mean, the password is top one nickname ever. In sports right now, I think. Yeah. But all this to say that Marcelo Meyer is off to a hell of a start in spring. Right now, the slash line is 385, 467, 769 with a, I don't know how to read that.
1236.
Yeah. My brain always farts when I look at OPS.
Yeah. I just remove the period and just read it as like 1236. Yeah.
Dude, I'm looking at the notes like, oh shit, wait, why do I say that?
But to your point, he's off to a scorching hot start, and it does feel like he's kind of the forgotten man because he's been consistently, I'd have to go back and look and see where Pipeline had them in their first update after that 2021 draft, but he's been a guy who's been pretty widely regarded as, I'll say, top 20 prospect in the sport since he's been drafted, with the caveat of, like I said, I didn't go back and check, but he's been a highly regarded prospect, a top half of the top 100 prospect since the moment he drafted him. And there was a bit of a log jam up at the front of that 21 draft, obviously, with Jordan Lawler, Khalil Watson was another one, Jackson Jobe, and obviously we know the Pirates went under slot at the number one pick. They went with Henry Davis. So Meyer, it felt like Meyer or Lawler, or I think there was another high school shortstop in the mix there that I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Khalil Watson, but that were all expected to be in that lump up at the top. And then Henry Davis going under slot with the Pirates kind of threw a wrench into that whole plan. But he's been a top half of the top 100, like I said, for his entire career. Whereas Anthony and Campbell, these are two guys that were comp picks. I know Anthony signed over slot. He was committed to Vanderbilt, and they obviously signed him away from that. And Campbell coming out of Georgia Tech. But these are guys that skyrocketed up the rankings, so they obviously got more media attention. But Meyer obviously has had his injury concerns, but he's still a really, really good player and a very highly regarded prospect. Like, he is the forgotten man of the three, but it isn't because of him. It's because of, like I said, the meteoric rise of the other two. And he's just absolutely tearing the cover off the ball right now. And something that stuck out to me as we look at the second base conversation and the way that the infield is going to shake out, and I understand it's because he hasn't played at all in AAA, but why isn't he, Corey yesterday said that as of right now, they're not planning on getting him reps at second base. And I'm kind of like, why not? Because if he continues playing at this pace, like, it's a lot to ask for a guy like you said. I think it's a little, the opening day is March 27th, so a little under a month until opening day. But if he continues to hit almost 400 with a 1200 OPS throughout the rest of spring, how is he not the opening day second baseman? Like,
yeah, I don't hate it. I know Cora mentioned that that could change. Also, real quick, I wanted to add that Meyer has been on these top 100 prospects lists for since he got drafted, but also he's been hurt. And we were talking about this yesterday too, when I mentioned that even though he has been hurt, he hasn't tanked. Like, his stock has not tanked at all, which you see with a lot of people. If pitchers get Tommy John surgery or position players get a major injury, then usually they fall a lot. And he's been pretty consistently up there throughout his entire, you know, minor league career now.
Yeah, I use this example, the Luis Perales example. He cracked the Baseball America top 100. I think he was like 59 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he blew out his elbow knee to Tommy John. And in their next update, he was completely off the list. And I understand that it's a little different with Tommy John because you don't really know how a pitcher is going to bounce back. But your point remains the same, that like guys, when they get major injuries or they miss a extended period of time, they tend to tank on these lists. And he's held fairly consistent in that top 25-ish range.
Yeah, yeah. But the second base debate, I was cutting these clips yesterday. So I know Cora, someone asked him about it. I don't remember who it was, but they asked about the possibility of him playing second. And the way he said it was like, not right now. Like, to me, it seems like he just wants to get him comfortable at shortstop and third base, because those are his sort of natural positions at this point. And with the injury history, I kind of understand it, where you don't want to mess with his fielding mechanics, because we've seen with Rafael Devers, even though that's his primary position at third base, he can get hurt on a fluke play and have that, you know, sideline his entire, or, you know, put a, what am I drawing a blank?
Damper.
Like, put a damper on his whole season. Jeez, words are hard. But all this to say that I'm kind of okay with letting him figure it out at third or shortstop, because like you said, Bregman could very easily be a $40 million bridge player for 1 year. Like, I don't think he's going to opt out, but if he does, then you'd rather just have Meyer ready to go at third base, in my opinion. And Trevor Story is ultimately probably going to get hurt. I know he's been doing the sort of media tour now, and everybody seems to be kind of gravitating towards him, which I kind of love, because I liked him in Colorado. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. All this to say that I think it will happen. If Von Grissom doesn't pan out and Christian Campbell, maybe he could go to the outfield. If there's some other trades, you still have the logjam in the outfield that could be addressed, and you still have an all-star worthy line or outfield all the way around. So there's a bunch of different options. I think as of right now, I'm okay with him not playing second, but that could change.
And the thing too is, like, so I think it was last year, but I'm pretty sure that with Jackson Holliday last year, he had a similar spring training as at least the one that Meyer is shaping up to have right now, where he was just on absolute fire and they still started him in AAA. And then I think it was like a couple weeks into the season, they called him up. He made his debut at Fenway randomly enough. And obviously he struggled, but I do think there's a scenario where Meyer continues to tear the cover off the ball. Campbell continues to slump, although I wouldn't be necessarily banking on that. And they say, okay, all three of you guys, we're going to start you in AAA. And Meyer in 2 weeks of AAA is hitting fucking 375 and is showing that he's clearly too advanced for this level, because that's something else that Cora said, that he thinks that Meyer is a guy that's going to get better as he continues to move up the ladder. So I think if things aren't going the way that they're hoping to, like maybe Devers is still really struggling at third base, maybe Yoshida is not, well, I mean, obviously we know Yoshida is not the player that they signed him to be when Heim signed him. And I think more likely than not, we're heading down the DFA path with Yoshida, because eventually, like, you're not blocking these guys for Masataka Yoshida. I love Masa. I'm a Masataka Yoshida believer. And I think he gets way too much shit from this market because he's a DH only, but like you're not blocking a top 15 prospect in the sport for Masataka Yoshida. And at the end of the day, I've had this rant before, you're the fucking Boston Red Sox. It's $18 million. Like, who cares? And I know it's not my money, so it's easy to say the fucking who cares, DFA him. But when you're talking about these types of talents to be like, oh, well, these guys are hitting 370 in AAA, but we got Masataka Yoshida at DH here, and they're blocking him. Like, that's just not something that they're going to do. Like, if it goes the DFA path, then it goes the DFA path, because it seems like I think he probably is a guy that signs pretty quickly after he clears waivers, yeah, and they don't have to pay him $18 million, but teams are content waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, his value's never been lower, and it's not going to just magically rise again unless you play him.
Right.
And at this point, he's not going to get consistent time. There's no pathway, especially if the prospects debut sooner rather than later, for Yoshida to get any sort of consistent playing time. And like you said, like, I think a team would be like foaming at the mouth at the opportunity to sign him for the vet minimum point. Mm-hmm. And he would contribute on another team.
Absolutely.
So it sucks, because I'm kind of a Yoshida believer too. It's just at this point, like, he doesn't have a spot here, and that's, like I said, a good problem to have. But at this point, it's like, what else can you do with him?
Right.
Like, we hear every single offseason, oh, well, he's sneaky good at defense, and I haven't seen him play. I haven't seen him play left field in a millennium now.
That's what they said last offseason. They were like, well, actually, we think the metrics, and they do the same shit with Devers. They're like, well, we actually think the metrics are a little bit misleading there. We think he's better than the metrics say, but like last year, they fucking refused to play him out there. Like, he, I know I've said this example before, but he was tearing the cover off the ball, and then Devers' shoulder started barking, so they wanted to take him off the field. So they move Yoshida to the bench, Devers to the DH spot. They feel like Devers is good enough in a couple days to go back to third base, slot Masa back into the DH, and poof, the hot streak is gone. And it was just solely because they refused to play him in the outfield to let him keep going. But again, all that to say that there's so many different roster construction paths that they can take right now, which is a great problem to have. You can have Marcelo Meyer potentially hitting 380 in spring training and being like, all right, we're going to send you to AAA. Like, just keep doing what you're doing. It's not an indictment on you or anything like that. It's just like, it's just the situation that we're in right now. And if he continues to do what he's doing right now in AAA, then it's a conversation that you have later. And like, these things sort themselves out. Everybody, every single year, overreacts. I mean, look at the rotation. We were talking about how deep the rotation is. How are they going to go with the six-man rotation? And now looks like Cutter Crawford's going to start the season on the IL. Brian Bello is just now starting to ramp up. Lucas Giolito has only thrown a 15-pitch bullpen so far. So, like, who knows what's going to happen with that? Like, these things sort themselves out. They always do. And everybody always overreacts. And it just, it's so meaningless to overreact to it.
Yeah, and let's not forget that last year, Connor Wong played defensive innings at second base. So it is a great problem to have that you don't have to put a catcher in the infield, aside from being a catcher. And now you have a bunch of options at second base, which has been the major position of need for the past however many years since Dustin Pedroia retired. And we've been beating that drum for a while, but now it seems like you have way more options than you've ever had before. If Vaughn Grissom goes down again, or he's not performing like last season, then you don't have to put Romy Gonzalez there. And I'm fine with Romy Gonzalez, but like,
he's a fine utility player.
He's a fine utility player, but now you have plus options to put at second base, and you're not missing out anywhere else.
Yeah. And I think something else that we're kind of missing here is, like, we haven't even touched on Roman Anthony and Willy Abreu. I think Roman Anthony has a, as things currently stand, I think Roman Anthony has the best chance to make the opening day roster with the Willy Abreu gastrointestinal infection. And we know what effect that had on Vaughn Grissom last year, where he lost 20 pounds and it took him the entire season. Like, he never gained the weight back until the off season. And now I think he's up 20 pounds. So he's up 40 pounds from losing all that from whatever infection or whatever was going on there. But Anthony's quietly putting together a fairly solid start to the spring. And I guess my, just quickly on Vaughn Grissom, he's also a guy that doesn't have a hit yet this spring. He's 0-7. So no one is really taking command of that second base job. So I think maybe they're leaning towards having Campbell and Meyer in AAA, but Anthony, 333, three runs, four RBIs, 500 OBP, 917 OPS. And if this Willy Abreu, I know that Cora said that he has lost a lot of strength from where he was last year. And it's not just on the baseball activity side. It's just like in his everyday life. So like, we'll see how things shake up as far as him making the opening day roster, but I'm not counting on that at this point, like, especially because we know the effect that it had on somebody in the last season. So I think it's just as easy to, and well, this is another point on the notes, but like, I don't understand why Seidan Rafael is just written in Sharpie in center field.
Yeah.
But it's an easy switch to make if Abreu can't go to start the season, to just stick Anthony in left, despite what some people have to say that he's a DH who fucking has to wear a helmet out in the, he's John Olerud out in the outfield. And so he doesn't run into the green monster and injure himself. Like, he's Blake Swihart trying to go out there and field balls. But like, it's just as easy to move everybody over one, or even if you want to keep Rafaela in center and have Duran play right, like, it effectively doesn't matter. They're both elite, elite gloves out there. And it's kind of a disservice to any of them to have to, as far as Abreu, Rafael, and Duran go, to have any of them playing left field at Fenway, because these are, obviously, we know Abreu won a gold glove last year. I think Rafael is capable of winning a gold glove in center, and I think Duran is capable of winning a gold glove in center. So to have any of them in left is a disservice, but especially if Abreu's not able to go, you just move Duran to right field. And Roman Anthony, who, like I said, the early returns in spring training have been pretty good. He had a double yesterday, an RBI double, scored Trace Thompson, I think it was, exit yeah. Velo at 104 miles an hour. So the bat to ball skills are obviously there. And I mean, we know what he is. He's the top prospect in the entire sport for a reason. So if I had to wager right now, I think he's the one that makes the opening day roster.
Yeah, I don't hate that at all. And I think there's something to be said about calling Anthony up instead of promoting Rob Refsnyder to your everyday left fielder for the start of the season, because he's always been a platoon bat and he absolutely excelled in that role last year. So to mess with his mojo, I don't like that either. And obviously, Anthony has way more upside
and
than
with the way,
Rob Refsnyder.
With the way that Cora has managed these young lefties, we saw it with Casas 2 years ago and then Abreu last year, they really shelter them against left-handed pitching to begin anyways. So I think there's a chance that you would see a straight platoon with Anthony and Refsnyder anyways, where Anthony gets every start against righties and Refsnyder, like you said, he's a lefty specialist and he just absolutely hammers lefties. So I think you'd see that anyways.
Yeah. And that's ideal at this point. I feel like the only other option is to maybe put Yoshida in left field and just hope for the best. But like we said, that is probably not happening ever again.
Yeah. And it still brings the question of like, who plays where, like, do you have Bregman play third, Devers at DH, Yoshida in left, and then say David Hamilton at second base? Because we haven't even touched on David Hamilton. I think has the inside track right now to win that second base job if they're going to go with somebody other than Bregman or Campbell. This is a guy that Cora said on Baseball Isn't Boring that he was the leader in the clubhouse for the Best Shape of His Life award. This was before everybody reported. He had a home run 2 days ago, yesterday. He just went deep recently. So the early returns on him have been good, but it really depends. I'm interested to see how this all shakes out. I mean, obviously we're talking about four games into spring training, so it's really early, but like, it's a good problem to have. And it's an exciting problem to have for us who are sickos. Like, we know the David Hamiltons, we know the prospects, we know this, and even seeing the password up is fun to see. And it's fun to have these conversations where like, you're talking about roster construction. Cause the last couple of years it's been like, all right, who's going to play here? And it's like, I don't fucking know, some fucking slapdick that they picked up off of the waivers.
Another part of this is, I mean, I don't think he has any shot of making the team, unfortunately, but it's cool to see Trace Thompson hit nukes.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, he was a guy before that was with the Dodgers, and he was always just called Clay Thompson's brother. And I mean, that's still kind of how I see him, but I didn't think he was still even playing. And now he has, I think, two home runs so far in spring. So
yeah, that's,
I mean,
it's just one of those things where like, it's added depth. Like, does he make the roster?
Yeah.
Probably not, because you already have Rob Refsnyder as your fourth outfielder. So, and you have him on a team friendly deal. And obviously Trace Thompson would also require a 40 man move. I mean, would any of the prospects, be it Anthony, Meyer, Campbell, because none of them are on the 40 man yet either. But obviously it's a lot more palatable to DFA someone like Justin Wilson, who's looked terrible in spring training so far, to make room for one of those guys as opposed to Trace Thompson, who it's cool to have him around and like he's Klay Thompson's brother and what have you, but like, are you really willing to DFA somebody to make room on the 40 man for a fifth outfielder?
No. And it's funny you bring up Justin Wilson, because I put this in the notes that I am all set on him. He had one outing.
Yep.
He got the absolute shit kicked out of him, and I would just like to never see him again, to be honest. He was one of the first offseason moves that the Red Sox made. Maybe the first.
I think he was the first. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a 1 year, I don't know, like $1 million deal, something like that.
Yeah.
But my point in bringing this up is, why would you sign this dude to the 40 man if you're going to invite guys like Adam Ottavino and Matt Moore to the spring training roster? Now you have a 40 man slot filled up by Justin Wilson, who in one spring training game has an absolute, I don't know what the ERA is, but it's high, whatever it is. And we have a decent amount of lefties who we've seen go. Now Sean Newcomb, who looked pretty good, and obviously he's had his injury history and has fallen off a cliff since he was pretty good with the Braves. And Matt Moore, who I think's like 40 years old.
You ready for the ERA on Justin Wilson?
Oh, hit me.
40.5.
Yeah, that's all I need to see. That's all I need to see. I think he got like an inning of work, maybe a little bit more.
Two-thirds of an inning.
Yeah. So I'm all set. I can't get on Craig Breslow for much this offseason, looking at the grand scheme of things. But signing him to a 40-man roster spot just pisses me off.
Yeah, that and the early returns on Chapman aren't great either. Two-thirds of an inning, two walks. But and we've had our druthers with the Chapman signing. This is a guy that you rushed out to sign. You set the market on lefty relievers for a guy who's kind of a piece of – not kind of – who's a piece of shit human.
Yeah.
And then every single lefty reliever that signed after him signed to a better deal. And like, we already know he's a heart attack closer. He's going to walk the house. Those are the two that really kind of grind my gears. I think Liam Hendricks looked good in his appearance. He gave up a hit, but then got out of it with the strikeout. Obviously everyone saw the video of him screaming fuck after he got out of that in the fourth inning, and he admitted, he was like, yeah, like I'd love to be the closer, and like you can scream and go nuts coming off the mound in the ninth inning after a save, but you kind of look like a knob if you're doing it in the seventh, which I like that term, knob. Definitely an Australian term, but the bullpen, will it's interesting to see how it'll shape up. I think Luis Guerrero is probably pretty close to securing a spot there, especially with how bad Josh Winkowski has looked. And I think Guerrero, he's probably not in the closer conversation to at least start, but I think he does have closer upside moving forward.
Yeah, same with Slayton there too. You got a couple young guys who will be here for the foreseeable future that you can kind of build that bullpen around, which I really like. Garrett Whitlock hasn't pitched yet, but I am a Garrett Whitlock truther. I have been since 2021 when he started just being absolute nails out of the bullpen. So I think he will rebound. I really hope he does, but I'm also just confident that getting back to that long reliever role will be good for him. Do you want to do your roster prediction now?
You want to save that one actually, because I have to go to work.
Oh, you're good. Okay. Okay. So one more quick thing I had was just a quote that I was reading in an article. So it says, this was like after Juan Soto signed and debuted with the Mets, I'm pretty sure. But it's basically about Aaron Judge and how him and Juan Soto didn't interact at all throughout this. So it says, Judge hit third last year behind Soto and called him one of a kind and a special player. Because Soto changed his phone number, Judge wasn't able to contact Soto until after the decision. Which I just think is fucking hilarious.
It's so funny that they're like the Yankees captain that was unable to talk about, like, this isn't a guy that he, like, if he was just on the Padres and hitting the open market and the Yankees were pursuing him, it'd be one thing to not be able to contact him. You were on a team with him last year and you weren't able to help with the recruiting at all. And like, ultimately he was just going wherever was the most money. And that was always going to be the Mets. Like, we could have done this 2 years ago and been like, all right, where do you think Juan Soto's going? He would have said the Mets, but it's funny to me. Like I said, anytime I have a chance to laugh at the Yankees, specifically Aaron Judge, I'm going to do it. And especially when you consider what happened in the playoffs last year with them, where Judge was a ghost and like, and Soto carried his lifeless corpse to losing in the World Series. And while we're making fun of the Yankees, Nestor Cortez said that the Yankees were the better team in the World Series last year. And if they only won game one, then they would have won the entire series. And he was like, in game five, we had this lead and this and that lead, and this, that, and the other. And like, to, if we only won game one, like, gee, Nestor, why didn't you guys win game one? Like,
I wonder.
We're all trying to find the guy who did this. And it's, I mean, I feel like that didn't get enough play because he's on the Brewers now. So like, who gives a shit? Like, but for Nestor, especially when you consider last year, he tweeted like, at the end of the day, they hate us because they ain't us. Everyone wants to be a Yankee. Everyone would die to be a Yankee. Like, okay, dude, give me a break.
Yeah, that's why they just allowed their players to start having beards, because everybody wants to be a Yankee.
Poor Devin Williams. He shaved his beard. He looked fucking terrible. And then like 3 days later, they're like, actually, you can have him now.
I mean, with the beard on that guy, he's going to have it back before the season starts.
He's already started growing it back. He looked at himself in the mirror after doing that and was like, oh, fuck, this looks awful. He's another guy. I think he was a free agent at the end of the year. Like, he was definitely, he shaved, looked at himself in the mirror, was like, how quickly can I get the fuck out of here? Like, there's no way I can keep doing this.
Yeah, we're changing the facial hair rule in big 2025. That's just insane.
Unbelievable.
But just some last digs on the Yankees there. And I don't think we play them in the regular season until like June.
Yeah, they've done that the last couple of years where now with the balanced schedule, you don't see them until later in the season so that the games mean a little bit more. And I generally like the balanced schedule because you should play every team at least once every year. And like it gives like people, I know you've already done the 30 ballparks, but like it gives people like me a chance to like go to these other ballparks. Or even when I was living in Chicago, like obviously they came to the White Sox every season, but like the White Sox are the White Sox and their park is pretty generic and it just doesn't have the same aura that Wrigley has. And I think Wrigley is like largely a dump, but it definitely has like a more special feel to it. And the park is unique with the ivy and whatnot. So to have them, I think before this balanced schedule, they didn't go to Wrigley at all while I was there. And then once they switched to the balanced schedule, they were there twice, obviously. And then they're going to be there again this year. So it was nice for me living somewhere else to have them come with that new balanced schedule. But I'd like to see the Yankees sooner than June. I understand why they do it, but like, I don't know. It just feels like a long time to wait.
I know. Yeah, I agree.
Especially this year when there's so much hype around the Red Sox and it feels like the like rivalry could actually be back. Like it feels like these are going to be the two teams duking it out for the division. And I don't think the rivalry is ever going to be what it was in 03, 04. And obviously we're both too young to remember that, but like we see sparks of it every now and then, obviously with the Tyler Austin, Joe Kelly fight. And then the Red Sox have owned the Yankees in the playoffs. So you don't really see it there, but to have some juice around both teams for once and then be like, all right, when do they play in the regular season? It's like, oh, you got to wait till June 7th. It's like, that kind of sucks.
Yeah. I mean, it will be interesting to see where the two teams are at as they head into their first matchup in the summer, which now we have to wait a couple months for, which is unfortunate. But baseball's back. We haven't been able to say that in any of the episodes thus far, so that's always cool. Some more storylines are coming out more frequently, hopefully on the more positive side next time. But yeah, as always, this has been a ton of fun. I know you have to get to work, so this is a bit of a shorter episode, but actually we cranked out an hour, so maybe it's not that short.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks so much for listening. As always, we'll talk to you guys next time.
See ya.